The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Winning touchdown, which would send them home to the championship game.
It was Marty Brown against Ohio State. Does he get another opportunity?
Three receivers bunt to the left. Beck is looking that way. And still looking. Takes off running. Carson Beck with his legs puts Miami on top. What a drive!
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today is Wednesday, January 14th. This is episode 213. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Joe, along for the ride tonight. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a look, join our pages. Make your picks with us. We're making picks with all these games, these NFL playoff games, these college games. Make your picks with us. You got something to say, tell us. Tonight, we talk about NFL wild card round, done. College football down to the final two championship game coming up Monday. Let's get it going. We're going to start it off with some college. Fiesta Bowl, Miami beat Ole Miss 31-27. Peach Bowl, Indiana beat Oregon 56-22. Darren, let's start it off with some college football.
So we had the top seed against the last at-large seed in this tournament, making it to the final. We get the it all comes down to this. We get the Hoosiers and the Hurricanes on Miami's home field, and let's see how we got there. Listen, the Miami-Ole Miss game ended up being a really great game, but let's really just talk about the second half because at the half, Miami was dominating this game. It was a four-point game. Ole Miss was able to hang around, you know, stay into this game, and, you know – it looked like Miami was really controlling the line of scrimmage, guys. I don't know if you guys saw anything different than I did. It looked like Miami just had a monstrous first half.
Even through three quarters, time of possession was, what, 34-11?
It was a slaughter, right?
You know, Ole Miss, the entire first half, the offense was that 173-yard run by Lacy. Other than that, they really had trouble against that Miami defense.
They had a 51-yard drive. Outside of that, it was all three and outs, right? So they had the field goal for the 51-yard drive. Miami, meanwhile, going up and down, up and down, up and down, long drives. I mean, they had four drives over 35 yards. I mean, 34 yards, 34 or 44 and 275-yard drives. But they're only up 17-13 at the half. You're saying, if you're Ole Miss, you buy, you take that the way you played in the first half. Kev? I'm sorry.
And, I mean, they had some bad penalties at the end of those drives. They had the interception. I mean, I just felt like every time they had a good drive going, you thought they were going to put seven on the board, and they don't.
No, you're right. And the third quarter, like you said, Kev, wasn't much different. Miami comes down the field, missed the field goal. Ole Miss says, you could do that. I can hit the upright and miss the field goal. They both miss, right? And then he hits the upright later and gets the field goal, which is pretty cool. Miami goes that long drive, like you said, Gino, 13-play drive, driving down to get the pick. Looked like Miami was going to, like, pull away there. They can't do it. And then after the punt, Ole Miss has their best drive of the night. They go 14 plays, 86 yards, but they settle for the field goal. And they get a targeting call, and they get another personal foul on that drive. Was it some sort of personal foul? And all of a sudden, it's first and goal, the 8, but Miami holds.
Yeah, it was a late hit, wasn't it?
It was a late hit, and Miami holds. That's right. And all of a sudden, Joe, we're sitting there, and it's – It's 24-19. They really don't. I'm sorry, 19-17. Ole Miss, and then all of a sudden Miami comes and answers.
And that was it. And you know, it was interesting. Is like you said, Darren. Miami held right there when they had that. They had them down in the goal, and they just stopped them. And that was the game right there. They only gave them the three, and that changed the whole thing. Miami was able to come back, and then it became a shootout.
Miami answers with a 75-yard drive in a minute 56.
Take
one page out of Ole Miss's playbook there with that quick drive.
And what it was just that short pass to Tony, and nobody can touch him when he gets space. This kid's going to be electric in 2 years when he's allowed to come out. He'll be a top five pick. He's electric. Unless, I mean, he'll probably be out. He's 17, right? Or something like that. He graduated a year early. Maybe he turned 18, but he started the year at 17. And all of a sudden, it's 24-19. But Ole Miss answers. You know, you say, oh, wow, they don't have much. But if Chambliss didn't show you anything, then you weren't watching because he looked impressive in that fourth quarter. All of a sudden, everybody in the world who he was the 51st top best quarterback in the transfer portal, like play a 370 at a Ferris State. And suddenly everybody wants the Jets to draft him on every freaking board, you see, because he has a good fourth quarter. And I like Chambliss, don't get me wrong. But he comes down, six plays, 75 yards, hits right for the 24-yard touchdown, and they go for the two-point conversion, and they make it. No problem with the two-point conversion in the fourth quarter. That was 27-24, and then Miami answers that epic final drive, Gino. They just walk down the field, 15 plays, 75 yards, four third-down conversions. And then, you know, Carson Beck, Kev, right, from three. No one's thinking Beck's running it. Nope. Carson Beck runs it in.
You know, Beck showed, you know, the ninth-year senior there. 9 years, roughly.
3 years old, and he's able to play.
I mean, he showed what a veteran does. He let him down. I mean, he was calm that whole – calm and cool that whole drive. He never looked rattled. And, you know, he knew he could pick apart that Ole Miss defense. They did not play well all game.
And the problem is you got to put pressure there. I mean, I'm not the whole drive. I'm not talking about the last play. I'm talking about he's just sitting there picking apart your zone the whole freaking game. He really was. I thought Ole Miss didn't do a great job of trying to generate pressure. That Miami O-line was great. I mean, Ole Miss got three sacks, I think, in this game, and but maybe four. I'm not sure, but it was one of those. So they did get there, but two of them were on one drive.
I think a lot of it, I mean, Miami ran almost 90 plays. They had the ball for almost 45 minutes. I think it caught up to the defense there.
No doubt, but he was just finding spots between the linebackers and the safeties all night, basically over the middle. Nobody getting a hand up to block anything, and the size on that Miami O-line is just so big. But it's not over. Even though they take the lead, go up 31-27 with 18 seconds left, you start thinking Mahomes-Kelce, Joe. You start thinking anything can happen. And he does. They go 23 yards, spike the ball, 17 yards, spike, get the incompletion in the end zone. Kind of a blatant interference that we were debating on. I know they're not going to call it there, but that was interference. I don't think they – I'm not saying the game should end on an interference, but the fact that they were saying incidental, it was a joke. He mugged them.
They're not calling that. You know they're not calling that.
I didn't say they should call it. I'm just saying for the announcers to say it was incidental is kind of ridiculous.
Hands ridiculous.
One guy's tackling the other guy.
The one thing I would say, it's a little tougher to call that in the NFL, I think, because the ball's placed at the one. If it's called in the NCAA, it's only a 15-yard penalty. They still have the ball at the 20. You're not getting it right at the goal line. So I think it might be a little easier to call it in college if you got to make the call. I mean, that was blatant.
Yeah, but don't
think that another play then. When we were watching it. Me and Gino both thought it was, and you thought it was at the first.
I didn't think it was on the first. And then I thought it was overthrown too much. You know, that was my thought, was it was too far out of the corner there. And then when you watch it on the replay, it's like, that ball was very catchable. So that is pass interference.
Kev, but even though the ball then would have went to the 20, they still get another play.
They get another play, yeah.
So, you know, I get what you're saying, but we said it that night. They're not making that call. It's not happening.
But it probably was a call. But nonetheless, listen, both quarterbacks played great. You know, Miami was the better team. And I'm going to get to this on you in a second. I'll give you a minute to think after we touch on Indiana or Oregon. Is the SEC really the best conference in America? We'll get to that in a minute. We're not going to get to that right now. Now we're going to go to the second semifinal Friday night. First play of the game, pick six. I think I'm done. I think I'm done with the entire recap of this game. Moore, to his credit, led him on a 14-play, 75-yard drive to tie it up at seven. But then it seemed like Mendoza might have played his best game of the season. He was pinpoint. He was accurate. And then a couple of fumbles deep on their own end that gave a couple of easy touchdowns. And this game was 42-7, 35-7 at the half. They missed the field goal, go up 42-7 early third quarter. Oregon's points were garbage. Indiana, this game wasn't fun to watch. At no point did you think in the third quarter beyond that you think Oregon could make a run.
Especially when Indiana came out first drive of the third quarter and put the game away there.
Yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't over at halftime, 42-7, game over.
I mean, along with the pick six, they had touchdowns on five of their first six drives. They were up 35-7 at the half. You know, Oregon never recovered from their three, you know, first half turnovers. You could just tell it was done.
It was 21 points on turnovers in the first half of the game. Yeah.
The pick six, the drive that started the three, and the drive that started the 19.
Yep.
They scored touchdowns on all three, and it was over. And when they had the ball, they moved the ball for the most part outside of one drive in the first half. So it wasn't like they were, you know, they were just getting lucky. Indiana seemed like they were moving the ball real well. Coolest moment of this game by far, after the game ends, an Oregon equipment manager gets the football for the pick six that Julian Pons picked off, finds Pons on the field, and presents it to him.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Nice freaking nice gesture. You know, your team just got blown out by 34. He goes and seeks this kid out and gives him the football from the pick six. I thought it was a great touch, by the way. That's about as much excitement as I can give for Dan Lanning being outscored 105-25 or whatever it is in two games. And that's because he scored points late. He does not want to play in Atlanta ever again. I don't think he'll ever coach in the SEC. I don't think Lanning wants to ever see this city again. He's getting blown out twice. Indiana was just dominant. I don't think there's really much more to say in this game. Any other comments from you guys?
Nope.
Now, before we get to before we get to this pick, a couple things happen. SEC, Kevin, five teams make the tournament. I know two of them knock each other out. Nobody makes it to the final again. Is the SEC just a propaganda machine, or is it really the best conference in the country?
NIL has even the playing field.
Well, because they can't buy – they're not the only ones buying players anymore.
Exactly.
And the Southwest Conference doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
SMU.
I think when you look – I think top to bottom, it's still the best conference in the country.
That's because your team was at the bottom.
They were next to last.
Too easy, Drill Sergeant. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some, you know, it seems like the best teams are not in the SEC right now. The last 3 years, the best teams have been outside the SEC at the very top.
The question I have.
I'm sorry, Kev. Joe, go ahead.
No, my question is that with this, Miami being a 10 seed, and there's a lot of controversy with Miami getting in to begin with, getting to the championship, does this solidify for you guys that we go to 16 for next year? Would it be different if Notre Dame – I mean, does Notre Dame have anything to say at this point?
So Joe, we had actually talked about this a couple weeks ago, and we're – all three of us, I think, at this point are under the impression that the fairer – and that's the word I'm going to use – way to do this is to go to 16 so that nobody has a bye that first week. I think we're already under that impression that 16 is a better way to go.
Now,
and hold on. And the whole Notre Dame Miami thing, you know, we drilled down on it.
Yes.
A lot of things happened. A lot of things fell into place was the reason why that all happened. You know, it's a bad ACC final, you know, how they come up with the title game. It's the way they had previously ranked it. I mean, you know, the list went on and on.
I remember you guys talking about it. But my thing is that now that Miami has gotten to the finals, is there any change that you guys have? Or do you feel the same way? Or
no. No, yeah, I don't. I feel the same way. It needs to go to 16.
Here's my only question on this because of Miami getting there. Eye test only because the only way we can do this. Notre Dame better than Oklahoma or Alabama or both in your eyes? To me, they're better than both on the eye test right now.
Eye test, yeah.
I mean,
I'm going to say no.
You don't think Notre Dame was as good as Alabama or Oklahoma, Joe?
No.
I think Notre Dame is as good as Alabama and Oklahoma.
I think Notre Dame plays too much of a...
I test watching these teams. I don't think Notre Dame gets embarrassed by Indiana. I don't think Notre Dame blows a 17-point lead at home.
Oh, I think Notre Dame does get embarrassed by Indiana if they're playing them. I think Notre Dame's record was built up a lot this year on a lot of bad games. So, yeah,
they lost were for a combined 4 points. It wasn't like they did Miami in Miami, lost by three, lost by a missed extra point against A&M. Mm-hmm. Now, and I was an A&M guy all season, so I'm not trying to shoot it down. But I get your point. I just was curious because, to me, Oklahoma didn't belong in. To me, Alabama didn't belong in.
Okay.
I would have put Notre Dame in over both of them. One of them would have gotten that last spot. I would have probably had, I guess, Oklahoma over Alabama because they beat them. But in Alabama before the playoffs started, then Alabama ends up beating them. So, listen, it was a pretty exciting college football playoff. The one thing I'll say, though, it kind of gets anticlimactic with these long waits between the semifinal and the final. And it was like the Super Bowl with the 2 weeks. It just gets a little anticlimactic if your team's not in it. So you feel like you haven't watched a college football game because you saw six NFL games in between. All staggered starts, so you watched all six of them since the last time you watched a college, and you're going to watch four more. So you're going to watch 10 pro games in between two college games.
Kev, and I know they can't – I'm sorry, Kev. I know they can't do it this particular way, but I think that's where college basketball gets it right, where the two semis are Saturday, the final is Monday, and you have a champion. And, again, I know it's different sport, different – I get it, but – I think that's where they get it right, where there is momentum built up. You just had Miami play a great game. Indiana crushed Oregon, and we're now waiting, 12 days before?
Game should have been Friday. Game should have been this Friday. I'm sorry. Kev?
Yeah, game should have been Friday, but you also look earlier. I think a lot of it's because of it's earlier because, these one seeds, you get championship weekend, you get a week off. Then you got the first round, and there's another week and a half to wait till New Year's Day to finish to play the semis or the quarterfinals. I mean, there's so much time built into the entire playoffs. This is actually a short period of time compared to the rest of the playoffs. This is only 10 days.
But it just seems that you lose such momentum because you watch. If you're a college town guy, you don't watch the NFL, you probably don't think anything of it. But if you're living where we live and you're going to watch 10 pro games separately, all staggered. It's not like they're all playing at one time like on a usual Sunday. You're watching all 10 games, and then you get to the college championship game on Monday night. Jake? Yep.
And Darren, here's your exact point, which is the guy you're trying to draw into this is me.
Yes.
Just had a good Thursday night game, a good Friday night game, and I got to wait 11 days before I see these teams play again.
Yep.
And that's the point right there. I'm the guy you're trying to get involved. You got me involved, and now I got to wait 11 days for the final. It's a lot.
I mean, the FCS can say there were 24 teams in their playoffs and be done right after New Year's. It can't be done.
So to that point, Kevin, why not? I mean, they'll never do it, the NCAA, but maybe they should start that first week right after the Heisman week and go right into it. And we finish with New Year's night, have the Rose Bowl be the championship game.
I think Darren has actually said that twice in the last 4 weeks.
The Rose Bowl should always be
it should always
where
be
the championship game is. The weather's outside of this year. It's never a problem. And it's the freaking Rose Bowl. I don't know. It's just me. But I do agree with you, Joe, even if it's that weekend or something like that. But either way, they're never going to listen to us. But the fact of the matter is that, Gino, you're correct because – even on good football weekends, if I watch the game Saturday, a Thursday night, and a Saturday night, and a Sunday doubleheader, or a Sunday night game, sometimes I'm footballed out by Monday night if it's not a matchup I want to watch.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, I'll just put it on for the score. Maybe I'll get glued to it. Maybe I won't. This is the championship game. I'll be glued. But if you're a casual fan, you may not be.
Well, did you feel that way this past weekend? Because you had College football Thursday, college football Friday, NFL Saturday, NFL Sunday, NFL Monday.
I was a little shy. I watched it, but I was I watched it though. But I was just like, it was neither team that really impressed me. Like, I'm the opposite of every other Jet fan. I like Rodgers. I was rooting for him, so I was like on the Rodgers bandwagon. I don't know why Jet fans blame Aaron Rodgers for the Jets' failures, but they do. I just don't get that one, but that's just me. But at the same time, I was a little fatigued, but I watched it. I don't know how you guys felt. Were you guys glued, or were you just watching it?
Yeah, because
no, I was watching it.
The games were good.
I watched it.
They were good games.
Yeah, we had a great weekend. At least,
you know, the Sunday night, Monday night, maybe not the most exciting, but they were close games until the fourth quarter.
Well,
so.
Listen, 7-6 Houston in the fourth. Chargers were always a play away from being right there. I mean, anything could have happened in these games. So now we get to the final, guy. We get to the championship, okay? A team that if you told me 5 years ago would ever make a final, I would have laughed at. The Indiana Hoosiers. Now the dominant team in the land, okay? They are going to play the Miami Hurricanes in Miami on their home field, Hard Rock Stadium. We get Fowler and Herb Street, who, by the way, Fowler misses a lot of stuff. He calls completions that are incomplete. He misses more than any play-by-play guy I've ever seen watch football. I mean, he's actually not very good. I like him. I remember him from, like, Scholastic Sports and all that stuff on ESPN back in the day. But he misses a ton. But you get Fowler, and I think Herb Street's one of the best, so it's a good combination. Indiana's favored by 8.5 last I saw.
Correct.
Gino, I'm going to start with you. Who wins? who's cutting down the well, no, not Nets, but who's walking away with the trade championship?
Who's tearing down the goalposts,
guys?
So Indiana enters the game riding an undefeated season, Heisman Trophy winner. They've dominated every postseason opponent. Two games, Alabama and Oregon, they've outscored them 94-25. I can't see Indiana losing. Could it be a little closer than we think? Yes. Indiana -8.5 is my pick. I can't believe that this game is not 14 points. And I know what you're going to tell me. I know you guys are going to tell me about Miami's defense and they're going to control the ball. Indiana is going to put a lot of points on the board. I'm hoping we get a good game out of this and it's not a blowout. Give me Indiana -8.5.
Joe, let's go with you next, Joe.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take the Hurricanes at home +8.5.
Are they winning the game or are you taking the cover?
You know what? I'll go out there with it, and I'll say it's going to be over. It's 47, I think. 47.5 is the last I saw. And I'm going to take Miami on the money line and the over because I think the U playing at home, they're going to have Ray Lewis on the sidelines, Michael Irvin, Jimmy Johnson may drive over. You never know. They're going to have all the ghosts down there in Miami. They'll be on the sidelines. Supposedly the ticket sales, though, Indiana got 65% of the tickets. I saw online that Indiana was allotted 65%, and Mark Cuban was complaining about that. But I don't know why. He probably has 10 suites for the game. But I think it's going to be the U, and I think Indiana has – I think Miami at home, their defense is good. I know Gino doesn't want to hear it, but their defense is good. And I think they're going to pull the upset.
Kev, where you going, pal?
Yeah, I think Miami's defense, you know, that offensive line, they can wreak havoc with just a four-man rush, which I think is so important. Yes, Indiana's the best team in the country right now. They're great on offense. They've got a terrific defense. But I think Miami's playing with house money, I feel like. And I think that offense, you know, Beck showed me a lot in the semifinal game. I think, you know, with Fletcher, he's been able to run the ball so effectively here. Malachi Toney is so fun to watch, and he's so explosive. He can make a play or two. I think Indiana wins. I've got to hedge it. I think Indiana wins, but I think Miami covers. I see this being Indiana somewhere around 27-21.
I hate to follow one of you and agree completely, but I'm going to follow and agree with Kevin. I think it's going to be closer. I do think Indiana finds a way to win. I think it'll be a little bit more high scoring than you do. I'm going to say it's going to – not a lot. I mean, I had the game as 28-24. I think that Indiana finds a way to win, and I think they find a way to win late. I think Miami has the lead in the fourth quarter in this game. I think Indiana finds a way to drive down the field late. I just think that it's – two really powerful teams that play a different way. Even if Miami plays their best, we saw it. They don't blow anybody out. Everybody's always around. So even if they win, I never think they're up by more than a score. And if it's a blowout, Indiana wins. If it's a close game, I still think Indiana wins, but Miami would have a shot. Miami will not win a blowout. That's what I'm going with.
94-25.
I get it. I agree. I don't think Miami should have been there.
They didn't outscore two teams by 26 points. 94-25. Do you not think that Indiana is putting up 30?
I said 28, so you got me. I was close, but I had.
I think they're going to get in the 20s. I think they get to 24-27.
I think they get in the 40s, Joe.
Wow,
Darren, we got mixed sports here. How much was UNLV going to crush Duke? Undefeated UNLV, right?
They won 30 the year earlier. They beat them 103-73, and it was going to be a slaughter. I agree.
I mean, it's one game. It can happen.
It can happen. That's it. And you're at home. You know, we don't discount being at home. I mean, as much as it's not supposed to be a home game.
It's not a home game, but
for Miami, it's as close as you can get.
94-25, Joe. I don't care who's home.
Do you know you're the lone wolf on this one?
And, no problem.
No. Listen, you know – smart money probably thinks you're the one that's correct out of the four of us. I'm just putting it that way.
Yep.
Kev, I feel okay with that, just so you know, because last week I had Miami and Indiana, and you both were against me in both games. So I'm okay.
There you go. I went 0-8 last week. So don't listen to me if you listen to the podcast. Kev, you got some gems for us.
Yeah. So coming out of that loss, so Oregon, last 3 years, they are 38-5.
Okay.
2 years ago, 2023, they lost two games, both to Washington, who lost in the national championship game. Last year, they lost once to Ohio State, who won the national championship. This year, they've lost twice to Indiana, playing in the national championship. Pretty high-quality losses there. At some point, though, Lanny's going to have to get over the hump here and get to the championship and win.
I agree.
Especially – we can talk about it a little bit later, but Moore's coming back for next year. He announced it today.
Yep.
He does not want to go play for the Jets, apparently.
Hey, listen, I'm glad because I think it could have been a mistake if we drafted him.
The kid's 20, and, you know, the four best teams he played against, the four best defenses he struggled. Indiana twice, Iowa, and Texas Tech.
And Samini had a little thing about quarterbacks that have only played – 1 year, we're under a certain age and had this few starts, and none of them really seemed to pan out. So I read that. I was like, oh, okay. Dodge a bullet. Sorry, Kev.
No, on the Indiana side, you know, Mendoza, 8 touchdown passes in the 2 games, 5 incompletions. Can't play much better than that.
That's what Geno's riding on.
Yep. Indiana, this became the 7th game they have scored 55 or more points. And won by 30 points or more.
Crazy.
You know, it plays right into Geno's. This only happens 2 more times at the FBS or equivalent level.
When you spend $120 million on NIL, you know, I guess you put together a good team.
The only two other teams to do that, the 1886 Yale Bulldogs.
You remember that game, Joe.
And yes. The 1885 Princeton Tigers.
Oh.
Geno played the line on that team.
Oh, my God.
Both sides, both ways.
But
I took the over in both games, Darren.
few NFL, you know, we'll, this is a little segue into the NFL. Pittsburgh, we know they lost a 7th straight playoff game. You realize they've trailed by 21 or more in all 7 games at some point. Tomlin, though, 19 straight non-losing seasons.
Hard to do.
Never had a losing season in his career. Tied with Belichick for 2nd place. Belichick did it from 01 to 19. 21 consecutive non-losing seasons. You know what coach did it?
Was it Curly Lambeau? I don't know. I'm reaching.
Tom
Landry. You're right.
Landry?
Yep. 65-85 with the Cowboys.
There you go. Before Jerry fired him.
And then Jerry fired him.
Sean McVay will be coaching his 15th playoff game this weekend, 15th different opponent.
Wow.
Wow.
He has never faced the same franchise twice in the playoffs. That almost seems impossible.
I know. That's a good one.
That's really freaking odd.
Yeah, and as a perfect segue to the weekend, it was a wild card weekend. All told, we had 12 lead changes in the fourth quarter. We had 4 game-winning touchdowns in the last 3 minutes, 4 comeback wins in the last 3 minutes. That's the most ever in any single postseason. Never mind the weekend. The entire postseason has never seen that many. And we had that in the span of 2 days, 4 games, really.
Yeah, the first 4.
Yeah.
It was a great weekend of football.
So let's start talking about – oh, and with Tomlin retiring or stepping down now, guys, there are 141 coaches since Tomlin was hired by Pittsburgh.
That's
crazy. That was just a number that just seemed mind-blowing. 141 different head coaches.
By the way, just on a quick segue here, in those 2019 winning seasons Tomlin had, how many winning seasons did the Jets have in that 19-year span?
No reason to be a jerk.
Shut up, Joe.
I think it's four. It might be 3. I might be reaching on 4.
But
I can only think of a few. I can only think of 9, 10.
They ran the guy out for 19 straight winning seasons, and the fans were fire Tomlin in the fourth quarter. And as a Jet fan as well, it's like we were killed to have 3 years in a row where we over 500.
Here's the thing. We're going to get into that after we do the games. I want to talk about Tomlin and Harbaugh and all that stuff. But that's a great point, Joe.
All right,
so let's run through the games.
All right, so we'll start NFC, then we'll go to AFC. So Rams beat the Panthers. Rams survived back-and-forth battle, 34-31. Carolina had a late go-ahead score, and then Matthew Stafford touchdown to Colby Parkinson. LA's offense kept pace all afternoon despite defensive lapses. Carolina pushed them to the brink, couldn't get the final stop. The Rams advance, and they're going to take on the Bears. We'll get to them in a minute. Darren?
Game was 14-0 early, Rams, then 17-7. And for some strange reason, nobody likes a field goal inside of 50 yards. I mean, they have a chance to go up 20-7. Instead, they get stopped, and the momentum seemed to change on that stop. And it's just one of those things that just drives me crazy. It wasn't 4th-and-1. I get 4th-and-1. 4th-and-3, come on. Kick the damn field goal. Go up 20-7. Keep the momentum. Show them that they can't stop you. I hate when teams have to go for everything. It's like if the field goal's between 35 and 46 yards, everybody just has a heart attack. I can't do it. Why? Get points. And they let the Panthers back in, and to their credit, they did a good job. Even when Bryce Young plays well, his stats never look good, by the way. They just never look impressive. They never jump off a page.
Well, I think one of us mentioned the shaky special teams all year by the Rams, and they gave up a blocked punt, which set up the go-ahead touchdown for the Panthers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, second game NFC. Bears beat the Packers 31-27. Green Bay built a 21-3 halftime lead. Dominated early both sides of the ball. Chicago stormed back with a massive 28-6 second half, flipping the game beyond relentless pressure, timely offense. Bears comeback stunned the Packers, sent them home early. Bears 31, Packers 27. They will be home for the Rams. Darren, start it.
The Packers left 7 points on the field. They missed an extra point and 2 field goals. Shouldn't even been a game. One thing stood out to me. It's going to be the dumbest play I'm going to mention the entire day. Packers are up 21-6, 3rd-and-2 at their own 45. Love is like looking for somebody, can't find anything. Not under any duress, and just throws it away. Doesn't even try to scramble for the 2 yards. Just, it's like played with no urgency, and I didn't understand the play. I didn't understand how you on 3rd-and-2 don't try to run out of the pocket. Either run for the first down or try to see if you can get a receiver on the run. He just threw it out of bounds. He just, like, threw it away. Like, all right, we're just going to punt it. They almost played not to lose in that second half, and it cost them. Even though they jumped out and they scored that late touchdown to go up 27-16, you're like, oh, maybe this is the play that, you know, turns the tide a little bit and stops Chicago from that run. But Chicago was not the better team. They just Green Bay left 7 points on the field. They missed 2 field goals, an extra point. That's the difference in this game.
I mean, it's amazing. They started off Chicago, great drive to open, took the points, which I was very proud of Johnson taking the points there. And then he started going on 4th down and every single time. It was like, enough is enough. two interceptions, two turnovers on downs. I mean, he just couldn't go for it enough. So Green Bay had those three straight touchdown drives, 21-3, and then the offense just sort of pulled back too much. Yeah. And even going to the fourth quarter, 21-6, despite all that, get the field goal, three straight touchdown drives for the Bears. And just great job. I mean, you know, when they were down 27-16.
Yep.
The missed extra point kept it 11, which kept it two scores, which I think was important psychologically there. That one drive, the 27-yard pass on fourth and eight from Williams to Odunze, where he scrambles out of the pocket. Yeah. I don't know how he got that ball out. I mean, dropped it in there perfectly. Odunze's, you know, running across the entire length of the field.
Yeah.
I mean,
he misses Loveland right over the middle with no problem, and all of a sudden throws that perfect on the run, running against his body. And he hits it's like my throwing against his body, I should say, and hits him.
Loveland had a great game, by the way.
He's a good player, really is.
Yeah, Loveland was like unstoppable for a good part of that game, man. Every time he caught a pass, you knew he was catching it. You knew he wasn't going to drop it. I mean, you know, eight receptions for 137 yards. I mean, just a great game.
Yeah, all right. No answers for him.
And Carson Williams just makes plays in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
Caleb Williams, Carson Beck, Jordan Bell. Doesn't matter who you know it. I was calling Carson Beck Jordan Beck before the show. That's why I'm making that joke.
All right. Yeah. The last NFC game, 49ers beat the Eagles 23-19. San Francisco pulled off the upset by capitalizing on Philadelphia drops, stalled drives. Hurts played clean football. Eagles never looked like they were together. Multiple key passes slip away. Niners made enough plays to knock out the defending champs. Darren?
Philly had the ball for 35-plus minutes. Won the turnover battle 2-0 and lost. That's hard to do. A.J. Brown, invisible, 3-for-25. I'll be stunned if he's on this team next year. He seems like a malcontent right now in a city that doesn't handle this very well. And it's going to sound like a weird thing, but a weekend of great games. I really loved this game. I was so into this game. It was just two classic franchises, very hard-hitting. Barkley had a solid game. McCaffrey made a great catch, like he was a receiver on that. That wide receiver throw. I think there's a lot of excitement in this game.
You have to be a little bit more specific because he had six catches for 66 yards and two touchdowns.
I'm talking about the touchdown over the shoulder. Only one was thrown by a wide receiver.
That was a nice pass by Jennings.
What is that?
Nice pass by Jennings there.
Oh, yeah. Great pass.
Put it right there. And I thought that McCaffrey adjusted his body really well on that one. Listen, I didn't think San Francisco was going to be able to win this game. I thought they could keep it close, but I didn't think they could win it. And
when Kittle went out, I figured that was it. I said that's it for San Francisco. Kittle's out, and but they patched it together the rest of the way. And you know, he had to go to the trickery, Shanahan, but he had everything moving. And Philadelphia, like Gino said, they looked horrible. It looked like they were not together. I mean. It was just bad. And A.J. Brown, like you said, Darren, is just – you're right.
They have played many regular season games this year and looked exactly like that.
Yes.
And sometimes it was against my Washington team or the Giants or the Cowboys, and it didn't matter how the hell they played because they were going to win. But that's the exact way they looked for a good part of the year. San Francisco advances. They're going to wind up playing the Seahawks coming up.
That's why Ken Petullo. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kev.
That's why Ken Petullo is looking for a job, the OC from Philly.
Yeah. You said Hurts played clean, but he didn't play good.
No. He was 20-for-35. I mean, you know, he had no interceptions. He had one touchdown pass.
Everybody's hurt. A defense where everybody's hurt. He wasn't impressive at home. I don't know. Yeah. There's something wrong in Philly. Sirianni survives, apparently.
Yeah. All right, we'll go to the AFC. So we'll start it off. Pats beat the Chargers 16-3. New England's defense smothered Justin Herbert, sacking him six times, controlling the tempo. Drake May made some big plays. He had a long scramble, set up points right before halftime. Chargers squandered red zone chances, never found rhythm. New England advances. They will advance. They're going to wind up playing the Texans next week at home. Darren?
one for 10 on third down and 207 total yards. Pretty much tells you everything you need to know. I mean, Herbert didn't have a lot of time in there, but neither did May. I didn't think Herbert was – Herbert didn't make any special play that he needed to make to have this team win the game or be in the game. He just did not make the big play when it was there. And sometimes Keenan Allen dropped two. You know, you had a couple things that didn't go right. But Herbert can't be your leading rusher. Herbert can't have they can't go one for 10 on third down. And, you know, the better team won. Patriots are better.
And we saw – did Drake May pass Patrick Mahomes for Chris Collinsworth's favorite quarterback?
It's getting real close.
Let me tell you about Patrick Mahomes. Oh, wait, no, Drake May now.
Yeah. All right, so Bills beat the Jaguars. They went on a wild back-and-forth game by scoring the final minutes to break the late tie. Both offenses traded punches. Jacksonville couldn't answer on the last possession. Buffalo winds up winning 27-24. Darren?
How does the most electric player on the field, for Jacksonville at least, I think for both teams, was Etienne, right?
Yep.
He had 10 carries.
Yep.
He had 5 receptions. 15 touches. I mean, sometimes these offensive coaches blow my mind because they overthink these game plans so much. This kid's got to get the ball. Every time he touched the ball, it looked like he was doing something. He's averaging 6 yards a pop, over, almost 7. I don't understand the game plan from Jacksonville. I understand that it was hard to get the ball to Jacoby Myers. They kind of blanketed him. They stopped him. He only had 4 attempts, 1 reception, including the last one that ended up becoming picked on a deflection. But I didn't understand how Etienne didn't get the ball more. I just don't understand how Jacksonville plans on winning these games. Gino, we talk about this every week with fantasy and stuff like that. It's like, how does Gibbs not get more carries? How does Bijan Robinson, you know, split carries in the red zone with freaking Algier? I don't get it. And in Jacksonville, it's the same crap. Etienne's got to get – he's got to have at least 20, 25 touches in this game. You can't let that happen. Again, I'm rooting against Buffalo because I'm a Jet fan, but I wanted to see a good game, and I just thought Jacksonville kind of coached it poorly in that one. And the 9-yard tush-push was a record, I think. That was pretty impressive by Buffalo.
I was going to say the kicker. I don't know if you were going to bring it up, but the kicker from Jacksonville missed the field goal, and this guy's – I know it was a long one, but he's been automatic all year from out there.
52 yards. It's not even a long one anymore to people now.
I know. This guy's got 68, 69 on his chart. So to miss that one, that it ends up being the difference in the game, 3 points.
Darren, I do think you're right. 10 carries in the game like that is unacceptable to go to ATN only 10 times on the ground. You got to run the ball in that. You know Buffalo's going to put some points up. You got to score. You got to try to control the game a little bit. I think the other thing that really hurt Jacksonville was Brian Thomas Jr. going out so early. I think that wound up hurting them being able to go to Jacoby Myers a lot because they were trying to take – at that point, they were just trying to take Jacoby Myers away. You know, P.J. Washington had 7. He had 7 receptions for 107 yards. He can do some things.
He's emerged, actually. He's emerged.
He's not the receiver that Brian Thomas Jr. or Jacoby Myers is right now. He's getting there, but he's not there right now. So once that injury happened, I think that really took the wind out of the sails of the passing game a little bit.
And that 4th down run where Lawrence's knee hit the ground early, how do you let that happen? He really wasn't touched there. You can't let your knee kind of hit the ground early. You have to. I know he's 6'6", and I would know what that's like, and he's skinny. He's got hair. Everything I'm not. But the fact of the matter is, how do you let your freaking knee hit the ground there? It turned the momentum of the game around. They had a chance of putting Buffalo in a real spot where they Buffalo couldn't run the ball anymore. They would Allen through the air the rest of the way, and they didn't do it. Sorry,
Kevin. Bills wind up going to the Broncos next week. We'll talk about that coming up. Last game, Texans beat the Steelers 36 Monday night. Houston's defense dominated, especially late in the game. Rodgers just looked like he was overwhelmed at some point. You know, Christian Kirk wound up having a big game. Darren?
I mean, this is the defense you can't have a non-mobile quarterback against.
Yep.
And Pittsburgh had a non-mobile quarterback. I mean, again, you know, DK Metcalf dropped a big pass early that could have kind of given Pittsburgh a little momentum when they were up. They had a couple of things, but Pittsburgh goes 2 for 14 on third down. They get a whole total of 175 yards for the game. Rodgers looked like he couldn't wait to get rid of the ball every time he touched it. It was like a hot potato. And, you know, what Stroud.
But they hung in. They hung in for three quarters.
7-6.
Barely enough. Yeah.
But then you get the whole situation where Stroud kept finding a way to keep him in it. Stroud's consistency has fallen off. Remember that rookie year where he didn't throw any picks?
Right.
He's a gone. But, it, you know, Houston was the better team. Better team won, and they pulled away. This game was 7-6 in the fourth, like you said, Joe. They hung in.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, the key point there was, you know, the second quarter when Stroud had the second fumble and Pittsburgh gets the ball at the 21-yard line, and they have to settle for the field goal. Only cuts it to 7-6. That's a golden opportunity to take the lead, get the home crowd behind you, get some momentum. And they killed it right there.
All right. Before we get into the matchups, we'll go through the games. Last week on the Kings Ransom, I hit a 6-point tease. I had Jacksonville +7.5, Chicago +7.5, and New England +2.5. That was the tease. 200 units, brought back 480. We're ahead by about 1,200 units at this point, so we're doing well with the Kings Ransom bets at this point. All right, let's get into it for this week. Saturday, first game, Bills at the Broncos. Broncos -1.5. Buffalo heads to Denver looking to avenge last year's blowout loss, leaning on Josh Allen's late-game magic from the wild card weekend. Denver returns rested off the bye with the league's number one seed, aiming to control the pace against the balanced offense. Kev, who you got?
Well, the Bills have Josh Allen.
And that's probably the best thing. Yes.
That's the best thing they have going for them. He's probably the best player on the field this week or this weekend against the Broncos. But that Bronco defense is really, really good. They have the bye week. You know Sean Payton's used to the bye week, so it's not like he's going to face him. He'll have the team ready. And Bo Nix seems to play up to the competition, I feel like. He has his bad games against bad teams, I feel like. I feel like he's going to do enough. And the fact that the Broncos were only 1.5-point favorites at home against the Bills, I'll take the Broncos easily and lay the 1.5.
Okay, Joe, where are you going?
I'm going to take the Bills. I'm going the opposite way. I'm going to take the Bills. I think that you guys talked about it. Everybody's talked about it. Josh Allen has gotten everybody else out. Burrow's out. Mahomes is out. This is it. I mean, this could be, you know, they got to circle the wagons, as they say, the Buffalo Bills. But this is their week. I think they have to. They're going to pull it out. I think this is it. Everything is cleared the way. Cook, Allen, I think they're going to be getting through. I'm going to say the Bills.
Darren?
I'm going to agree with Joe. I don't know why. I just think the best player on the field is in Buffalo, and I think that he's the quarterback that's going to find a way to get down there late. I think this is going to be a highly competitive game. I think it's going to be seesaw, not necessarily offensive. I think we'll see field goals in this game more than we see in most. I think it's going to be, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood of, I don't know, I'm going to say it's 23-21, Buffalo with a late field goal to get by. I'm rooting for Denver, by the way, but I'm going to take Buffalo.
So I'm going to go with Buffalo. I'm taking Buffalo with the points, I think. I think this is the game that Josh Allen really solidifies that they are the Super Bowl contender. Kev, sorry, you're by yourself on this one.
Everybody else
got Buffalo. All right, I'm gonna keep it with the AFC. So the Sunday 3 o'clock game is the Texans at the Patriots -3. Houston's defense dominated Pittsburgh. They now face a far tougher challenge against New England's disciplined, playoff-tested attack. Pats trusted defense to dictate the game while Drake May looks to build on a poised postseason debut. Kev, where you going?
Boy, we saw how good that Texans defense was. Yes, it's against an immobile quarterback. But, you know, May had trouble. He did fumble a couple of times against the Chargers. He was able to recover. They didn't lose the fumbles. But I think, you know, with Texas's pass rush, they can get there with four, especially with Hunter and Anderson. And I think the Texans pulled us out. I think C.J. Stroud got his awful game out of him. I don't think he's going to play as bad as he did the other night. I'm going to take Texans plus a three. Is it plus three?
It is plus three.
I'll take them plus three at New England to win outright.
Okay. Joe?
I'm going to follow Kevin. I think the Houston Texans plus three. I think, you know what, Drake May, you know, New England's home, but I think C.J. Stroud, Texans defense is playing well. This is the second third year in a row now for the Texans in the playoffs. You know, it's getting them – they're due to break out, get to the AFC championship game, which they would host against the Bills if they actually played. Yes, they would, right?
Yes, they would.
Yeah, so they would host against the Bills if they get there, which that would be an interesting game. But I do think the Texans. I'm going to take the Texans plus three.
Darren?
I think the Texans win the game. I think they're better. I think their defense is better. Will Campbell struggled against the Charger pass rush. The tackles had trouble against the Chargers. Now they're going up against a better pass rush. I don't think it gets better with age. Listen, I love this. I get Buck and Aikman on the call. So if Drake May makes a mistake, I'm going to get to hear about it because Aikman calls out people better than anybody in the business to me. I'm excited that this one's an ABC game. I'm going to take Houston to win this game. I think Houston wins it by a touchdown. I'm going to say that they win this game 24-17.
Clean sweep. I'm taking Houston also. Houston plus the three. I think this is just a bit too much for this New England team this week.
Bet the house on the Patriots.
Yeah, Patriots if you're listening, please.
All right, NFC, Saturday, 49ers at Seahawks minus -7. San Francisco enters this game banged up after upsetting the Eagles. Defense proved it could still win ugly if it has to. Seattle, fresh off the bye, trying to exploit the Niners' injuries. We're going to see them play with tempo. Geno Smith's efficiency. I'm sorry, not Geno Smith. I'm sorry. Woo!
The other ex-Jet quarterback.
Wow, the other ex-Jet quarterback.
Darnold.
Sam Darnold's efficiency at home and a good running game, San Francisco at Seattle. Let's change it up. Darren, why don't you start this one?
Seattle's going to win this one, and they're going to win going away. I think Seattle wins it by 14. I'm going to take Seattle to win this game. Let's say, I'm going to say 17. I'm going to say 30-13. Seattle, I think it's close for about 2.5 to 3 quarters. I think Seattle pours it on late. I just think San Francisco just a little too decimated to do damage against that Seattle D.
Joe, where you going?
You know what? I'm going to take the Niners plus 7, but I do think Seattle might win the game. Even though I don't know Sam Darnold, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I don't know. Now I'm hearing Fred Warner may play. He's not ruling himself completely out for Saturday's game. He said there's a chance he could play, but I don't know how good he would be, but I guess Fred Warner at 70% is probably better than some of these other guys. But I think the 49ers are going to hold it close the whole game, but it might just be like that game they played a couple of weeks ago where it comes down to 1 or 2 points at the end. So I'm going to take the 49ers plus 7.
Okay. And Kev?
It was first time they played San Fran 17-13. Second time was Seattle 13-3. So obviously, under seems like the play here. Like you said, Darren, another key injury. I mean, at some point, it's got to stop. But Sam Darnold. QBR through 10 weeks, almost 78. Since then, it's below 40. He has not been good. He led the NFL in turnovers with 20. It's Sam Darnold in the playoff game. I'll take the San Fran plus the 7.
All right, I'm taking Seattle, so we're 2-2 on here. I think Seattle's just too much for this San Francisco team. I think they're too beat up with some injuries. You don't know about Warner. You don't know what Kittle's even going to make it out on that field. I think Seattle's rested. I think Seattle's rested. They're ready. Give me Seattle minus the 7. Last game on the board, Rams at the Bears. Rams minus 3.5. Rams offense is rolling after surviving against Carolina. Stafford looked locked in for a lot of that game. This is going to be a cold weather test. This is a big one. Chicago riding the momentum over the massive win over the Green Bay Packers. Darren?
I think the Rams. I think the Rams are going to win this one by, I don't know. I say they win by 7. I'm going to say that the Rams win this game 28-21. I just think that they're a little bit better. I just think there's too much for Chicago to have to defend here.
Joe? I think the Rams as well. I also think, like, last week Chicago got away. Packers left them in the game. I don't think the Rams are going to let him back in the game. I think every chance McVay gets, he's going to, I hate to use the phrase, step on their throat. But I think McVay has been down this road. So has Stafford. I think they're going to show the Bears will give it a shot, but I don't think so. I think it's all Rams.
Kev?
Rams are the better team by far. We're playing in -7 wind chills. The Bears somehow, some ways, seem to pull out these wins out of their ass somewhere. I'm going to take the Bears plus +3.5 to win outright.
You've been on them all year. Why stop now?
Why would you go off them now?
Why stop now?
I think the Rams are just a better team. I think this is where the Bears end. Similar to last year where I thought at some point Washington ended after the game against Detroit. This is the same thing. I think this Chicago's time is done now. Give me the Rams -3.5. Those are the picks.
Quick point on that game too. Remember this. McVay and LaFleur are friends. And the way Ben Johnson treated LaFleur at the end of that game was a little bit douchey. I think McVay, if he gets a chance to step on his neck, is gonna. I think Ben Johnson's kind of an ass. I'm not a fan. I think that that's a little bit of motivation for McVay if he gets a chance to run.
Kings ransom. I'm taking a three-team six-point tease at +140. Buffalo +7.5. Houston +9. The Rams +2.5. That's the Kings ransom bet for this week. One question. We know the eight teams that are left. NFL, Roger Goodell. Mm-hmm. What is the matchup that he is despising for this Super Bowl?
Texans, Broncos. Oh, no, sorry. I'm an idiot.
Bills, Broncos, Texans, Pats, San Francisco, Seattle, Rams, Bears.
Seattle, Buffalo.
No, because Josh Allen's a story.
I know, but you don't get the Boston market. You don't get the Houston market.
And I think that's the one, though, Darren. I think it's Houston, Seattle.
Houston, Seattle. Houston,
Seattle could be, that's but Houston's a big market, though.
Houston, Seattle is the matchup. Goodell is like – and the NFL, the TV sponsors, that's the one. There's no big quarterback unless C.J. Stroud has some huge games here. Sam Darnold, no big market. Houston, Seattle. I think that's the one that they're dreading that could happen at this point in time.
And listen, there's a chance that both are hosting games in the championship game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. So Tomlin, a question for you guys. I know that he stepped down. Do you think it was encouraged for him to step down, or do you think he did it on his own?
I think he knew his time.
Yeah, I agree with you, Kevin. I think he realized that was, you know what? He heard the chance two or three times towards the end of the season. I think he's like, you know what? I'm just going to step away right now, and I'm not going to get canned, you know.
You know, it's an aging expensive defense. They're assuming Rodgers doesn't come back. Now they're in quarterback purgatory again. And they've been there for how many years? Since Roethlisberger retired.
Yes.
He's gone through Pickett and Rudolph and Trubisky and Wilson and Fields. Now Rodgers. They've been good enough to be a playoff team, but not bad enough to get high draft picks and get a quarterback for the future. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for the Pittsburgh to reset. And I think Tomlin knows that.
I think he was pushed.
I agree with Gino, by the way.
I think Pittsburgh went to him and said, listen, we are looking to change this up. This is a good time for us to reset everything. We are not going to fire you, but we would really like you to step down. We think this is the time after 19 years to change everything up. We're going to have to bring a younger team in here with a new quarterback, and we'd like you to resign on your own because we don't want to fire you. And I think that's exactly how it went down, Darren. It's a good question.
I feel the same way. I think that they said, listen, we're going to give you the option. Either we can let you go or you can leave on your own terms and we'll just cover it up. Now, the thing is, now Tomlin will sit out this year, most likely. But even in 2 years, he's still under contract with the Steelers. So you have to trade for him if you want him to coach for you. So it's it'll be interesting if anybody decides to trade for him. I don't think so. I think Tomlin might sit out a year, might broadcast for a year, and then maybe come back, or maybe Pittsburgh just lets him loose from the deal. I can see Rooney's being pretty decent about it. Joe?
Let me ask you guys this. We saw in the last 3 to 4 years, Belichick after 20 plus years, Harbaugh with 18, Tomlin with 19. Who is there anybody out there now that you think has a 20-year run now, the way the NFL is? And I know
Reed is the last guy. It's Andy Reed.
About McVay? You think McVay could get 20 years out of the Rams?
He almost stepped down 3 years ago.
I know. That's what I mean. And if Stafford leaves, would that be McVay's ticket out? But thinking about it, I mean, you're talking about generations of Steeler fans who didn't even know that Cowher coached the team. That's how long ago it was.
Three coaches in 69.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, is the next Steelers coach going to make it 20 years? I mean, I don't know. Rooney may be gone in the next 20 years. So I wonder, will we see guys who put these 20-year streaks together?
Yes. You'll see a few. You always do. It's just it's becoming more of a rarity because these guys are getting turned over every four or five.
Look at Sirianni. He wins the Super Bowl, and the next year they want him out.
Philadelphia fired Peterson after a Super Bowl, too. I mean, you know, that's the way it goes. I do think so. That it's hard to do. Reed's the next guy on the list, though. John Harbaugh meeting with the Giants today. All signs seem to point that he wants to go there. Did the Giants win the offseason by getting him?
He before you say that, he is going to go down to Atlanta. He's very good friends with Matt Ryan, who's now the GM. So he's not going to make a decision yet, but I listen, the Giants are probably going to give him everything he wants. It's been rumored that that's basically he has full-blown – He can have basically anything he wants to be here. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was with the Giants next year.
The Giants want him. The Giants make every effort to sign him. If they don't, big disappointment. And you know that next coach coming in is going to be compared to Harbaugh, and going to have a tough time meeting those expectations, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just one of those guys that, you know, to see Tomlin and Harbaugh go in the same year, I thought one was definitely going to go whoever lost that game. Ends up both of them go a week later. Interesting stuff. I'm sorry, Kev.
It's funny that Zach Taylor's the last coach standing in the AFC North.
Exactly. And then Dante Moore not going pro. Do you think it's a benefit to the Jets or a detriment to the Jets?
With all the stuff with him being so young, not experienced in the draft in college here, one full year as a starter. I know he started a few games with UCLA a couple of years ago. It would have been a big investment for the 2 pick. I'm okay with him not coming out. And next year's a year. Next year's loaded. If everybody comes out, who should be coming out? Next year's loaded at quarterback, and they have 3 first-round picks.
Kev wants Sellers. Joe, what do you think?
So, Kev, would you flip this pick? Would you flip the 2 pick now and try to get more?
If anybody's interested coming up, yeah.
But I don't know if you're going to get the
quarterback. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's what I'm trying to – I'm just throwing that out there. Would we trade a 2 pick this year and hope to get more for the first round next year? I mean, and but then as Jet fans, we're getting another year older of knowing that we're going to go into possibly another 3-14, and where does that leave Aaron Glenn? Because is he going to want to coach a team where he thinks that, you know, they're going to give him assurances? You know, Aaron, we're not going to draft a quarterback. You're going to be stuck with whatever we can find out there. And, don't worry about it.
It's going to be a veteran. And then fourth round, you're going to draft somebody of the caliber of Garrett Nussmeier. For example.
Okay.
Do you agree with that, Darren?
I do. I think that they're going to find somebody in the mid rounds that they're going to put they're going to give an opportunity to. And then next year, there's five or six legit quarterbacks that are first rounders right now. We don't know if anybody falls out. We don't know if anybody jumps up. You know, but I do think that listen, the Raiders are the team in the catbird seat. There's one quarterback now in the draft. If they don't want to take him and they want to really build their team up, they can trade out of there for it. Otherwise, I think the Jets end up with like a Kyler Murray leading the way. And I think that's the guy. I'm being honest. I don't want him, but I think that's the guy. G?
So this is not – my statement is not on the Jets this year right now, but my point for the last – my point of view for the last 12, 15 years in the NFL has been when you have these low picks, you take a quarterback because you hope you're not in the low end of this draft the following year. You don't know if you're going to be in a position to get a quarterback. When you are in the position to get a quarterback, you take a quarterback because that is what you need to win in the NFL. And if you miss, you miss. Doesn't matter. But you have to do it because otherwise you may not get a shot next year to take a quarterback. Again, Kev, this is not dependent on the Jets right now at this position this year. But this has been my point of view for 15 years. I haven't changed it. I know we talk about this all the time because you give me all these quarterbacks that were taken around 5 and 9. It doesn't matter. When you're at the top of the draft and have one of these picks, you need to, if you don't have a quarterback, you need to take a quarterback because you don't know if you're going to be in this position next year. It just happens.
Get Simpson at 15, though, and he's the second quarterback on the draft board.
Again, do not make the specific case with the Jets right now. But I'm talking in general. That's been my point of view for 15 years. I haven't changed my point of view in 15 years. When you have these picks, you have to take it. You have to go for these quarterbacks because, honestly, that's the only way you're winning right now in the NFL. It's the only way you've been winning in the NFL. So
that too.
Well, Zach Wilson worked out. Zach Wilson worked out. Sam Darnold.
No, you still have to get the quarterback. But when you don't take that, when you don't take the shot, when you're in the top five of taking one of these quarterbacks, you have no chance. You have to get lucky somewhere else in the draft and get one. Otherwise, you're not going to win.
I agree with you. I do agree with you. You don't win without a quarterback in this
league. That's it. You know, everybody wants to think that the Giants did a great job last year in getting Dart in the second half of round one last year. Great. Mm-hmm. At this moment, he's won nothing. He's done nothing. Do we know he's going to be good? We hope he's going to be good if you're a Giant fan. But you don't know. That's the same way they felt about freaking, what's his name? Daniel Jones.
I know.
After year one. You don't know. And the Giants are in the top five. They got to take another player. I get it. Because you now think you have your quarterback. But if Jackson Dart fails this year, next year they're going to be in the top five again. They're going to have to take a quarterback again. Here we go. You have to do it. It's just the way it, listen, and somebody somewhere could talk me out of that point of view at some point in time. It's not going to happen tonight, that's for sure. But, you know, if someone wants to talk me out, that's fine. All right, let's go around. Let's hit some – anybody got any sports they want to touch on?
Just Darren? Baseball a little bit. Mets offering $50 million a year to Kyle Tucker. Thoughts, Kev?
Three or four years? Yeah, why not? It's money.
It's at least five. The rumor was five. The rumor was five.
I thought the rumor today was they went to a fourth year.
No, it was three, five.
And they went to a fourth.
He's not sure.
He's not coming here for three.
I think he has an out clause after one, though. I think what they're doing is like what Michael King did, and they didn't do every year he gets an out. But
if he can make $50 million a year for 3 years, he'll do it.
Do you want him?
Yeah.
All right.
You need to replace. You need an outfielder.
Do you want anybody right now? Does it have to be him, or does it matter if it was Bellinger at that price?
Bellinger's not going to be that price.
No, but listen, money. Let's assume money's the same. Is it Bellinger or Tucker?
Money's the same. I want Tucker.
Okay. Listen, I'm asking only because the way you made that seem is you got to bring somebody in here, so it doesn't need to be him. It could be anybody at that point.
Tucker's one. Bellinger's two on my list.
Okay.
Gino, Ryan Weathers, excited about this this important Yankee move yet again by Cashman, trying to underwhelm his fan base every week.
It's another starter. Gave up four prospects. The list I looked at, it was a number 8, a number 13, a number 26, and then someone not in the top 30. To me, it doesn't matter because most of those guys that are lower than the 10th best prospect have no chance of making the Yankee roster ever. Okay? So, makes no difference to me. Another starter brought in here, fine. You're going through the first half of the season without Rodon and without Gerrit Cole, so you're going to need somebody to start. As long as the kid stays healthy, looks like he's got a live arm. He's a lefty. Okay.
Does that mean David Weathers is no automatic for Old Timers Day this year?
Oh, definitely. Probably.
He'll be there.
Probably. We had two signings in the last
week. Last show, what he thought of Bregman going to Chicago.
There you go. That's the first one.
I think that's a good move for the Cubs. I think now the Red Sox, of course, they lost Bregman, but then today they picked up Ranger Suarez. So they went right back to work. But no, Bregman, you know what? I think he'll be good with the Cubs. He's out of the Yankees division. That's the most important thing. Get him out of the American League, too. Get him into the National League. We don't have to see him until the World Series.
Am I the only guy that doesn't love Ranger Suarez? I thought he got a little too much money. I think he's hittable. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
He's a nice third or fourth starter. I think by the end of the contract, he'll be a fifth starter at best.
Yeah, $26 million a year, Darren.
It's average.
That's what you're paying these guys. I mean, there's no way around it.
I had the lefty at Fenway who's going to give up hard contact like he can.
And then Arenado going back to Arizona, I mean, the last one I saw.
Well,
St. Louis is paying most of the money, apparently.
They're paying $31 million, and Arizona gave up their 8th prospect in the deal, pitcher prospect Jack Martinez. So it's Jack Martinez for Nolan Arenado and $31 million. If you're Arizona, how do you not make that deal?
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a no-brainer. 2 years left on the deal.
The only problem Arizona now has is what the hell do they do with Jordan Lawler? That's basically their problem. Jordan Lawler still doesn't have a position now again. So
there we go.
DH.
Yeah, right.
And that's all I have for baseball. You guys have anything else? Treasures if you want.
Kev, you want to touch on golf?
Oh yeah. Koepka's back in the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Are you happy, Kev?
I'm happy to see him back. I mean, he's given up a boatload of money to come back. You know, when you look at it, he's not eligible for how many years? The next five years, I think he's not eligible for any of the performance payouts that they get. He's not eligible for the FedEx bonus money this year. He's got it. He has to play a certain number of events, especially ones that the PGA Tour designates that he has to play. I mean, it's costing him maybe upwards. I've seen estimates, depending on how well he plays, anywhere between $50 and $80 million.
Yeah, that's what I saw that as well.
And what did he get paid to live? I'm sure he's offsetting the cost. Yeah.
And the simple fact
is, as funny as it is to say $50-$80 million, probably doesn't mean that much to him.
Yeah.
But now, still, I mean, it's a severe financial penalty for what he did. But, you know, he's a great golfer. I mean, we want to see him.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson re-upped the other way. He's staying.
Yep.
Yeah. But now we get to watch Koepka. And Koepka's a good player.
There's a 1 week, what is it? It's like a 2 week window now that the PGA gave these guys. You have 2 weeks to transfer. Otherwise, they're closing the window and it might not open again. It doesn't necessarily going to open every year.
Well, it was basically there are certain conditions. You had to be a major win or at least
I think it was John Rahm would be eligible.
The only three golfers that are eligible.
It was, Bryson, Rahm, and
Cam Smith.
And they all committed to LIV, so they're all staying.
Listen, they make a hell of a lot of money at LIV. Just that they're not seen as much. They get seen in the majors, and that's it. And listen, Koepka's going to make his money by going to those tournaments that nobody wants to go to and winning by 7 strokes.
Yep.
He'll be top 5 in almost all those tournaments that we don't know anything about. And that'll be the key.
Okay. Anybody got anything else?
Just my treasures here.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Couple baseball ones. 1997, because Gino loves when I do this, Tony Gwynn had a 394 batting average at the All-Star break, and he was second in hitting to Larry Walker's 398. Wow. Willie Stargell, greatest thrill in baseball when Sandy Koufax retired. we all know of Hack Wilson's amazing season in 1930, correct, right? It's pretty easy. Everybody remembers the 190 ribbies.
Kept went to 10 of those games.
What was the Gino caught twice in that series. You guys know the size of Hack Wilson, how big he was?
5'6".
5'6", 190 pounds with a size 6 shoe.
There you go.
Just like a little guy, but he was barrel-chested, had an 18-inch neck at 5'6". I can't even imagine how they put this guy together. Anyway, that was interesting. Gino loves when I go with the Bob Gibson. 9 World Series starts, 81 innings pitched. what can I say? He always went the distance. Little quick football story that I'm going to end with a baseball one. Miles Garrett has the record, actually two football ones, of sacks. He broke the record this year. But did you know when it was unofficial, Deacon Jones had 26 sacks in a 14-game season in 67, also had two other seasons of 22 and 24. But they weren't counted back then. He also coined the phrase, the sack, as he described it as the act of putting all offensive players in a big bag and beating them with a baseball bat. While we're talking about the Browns, because it's fun, AFC North championship since 2000, Steelers 11, Ravens 8, Bengals 6, Titans 1, Browns 0. Titans haven't been in the league in forever. And that's what we get. I have one last one. I just got to read this one because it's a baseball story about the great Rick Sutcliffe. And I thought it was actually a pretty cool one when I saw it. So Mark Race tells the story. So Rick Sutcliffe's pitching in Cincinnati, and he gives back-to-back home runs. And in Cincinnati, they shoot off fireworks after the home runs. So Sutcliffe is an intense guy. Eric Davis takes him deep. Paul O'Neill takes him deep. After that, pitching coach Billy Connors walks out to the mound. Sutcliffe yells at him, shockingly. I know I gave up back-to-back home runs, but get your ass back in the dugout and tell Zimmer to settle down, too. Billy Connors looks at Sutcliffe and says, I know you have everything under control, Rick. I just wanted to give the guy running the fireworks a little more time to reload. With apologies, Mr. Sutcliffe, still my favorite story.
I have one NCAA one.
Okay, go for it.
So, Saturday, January 10th, Chicago State against Stonehill. Mm-hmm. Chicago State found themselves up 2 points with 0.1 seconds left with the ball. And what happened? They called a timeout, which signaled a technical foul. And Stonehill got two free throws, made both of them, to force overtime, and won in overtime 85-82, and Stonehill won the game.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh.
I guess no timeouts left, huh?
The win probability read 100% at that point of the game with 0.1 seconds left.
And you know somebody had money on it somewhere.
I did not, thankfully.
And you that's boys all have I any got. Points on anything else before we wrap up?
I'm watching. I don't want to talk about the game itself. Arkansas versus South Carolina right now.
You don't want to talk about the score.
Arkansas is playing all eight of the Elite Eight teams from last year.
Yeah.
Their schedule this year.
Yeah. Calipari schedules everybody. Gotta love it. Right now, Texas is up on undefeated Vanderbilt by 6 in the second half. We'll see what happens there, too. A lot going on. Guys, as we end the college football season, we'll be introducing NBA, NHL, and college basketball more and more as the weeks go on. NFL playoffs will still dominate for the next couple weeks. Kev?
And the Olympics coming up soon.
Olympics
with Gino. All the curling you want right here.
Gino, never a big fan of the two-man luge, but does like the four-man bobsled. There's just certain things that happen that we all enjoy. Gino will be on the mountain live in Italy for us, and we're excited for that. That's live coverage.
In Milan Cortina.
Listen, you want to find a place that you would actually go and watch the Olympics in the winter? This is probably it, G. Anyway, guys, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. And before I go, thank you, Joe, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Give us a little insight.
Thank you,
Joe. Definitely appreciate you. Having your insight on this.
Thank you.
And we'll have you back, obviously. But we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here from Gino. We'll talk about the wonderful wild world of sports along with Joe tonight. A wild world where the Jets can't even get a quarterback that they want because he won't even freaking come out. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We're also posting a ton on social media. Be one of our social media followers. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Even if you don't like it, lie and pretend you like it. Share it and everything else. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.